The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Paycheck Partner Patterns. While some area counties have leveraged manufacturing to boost pay, others struggle to keep up with the Triangle's wage growth. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Earnings Report. The Greater Triangle's Halo Counties are seeing growth, but high-paying jobs are harder to land. And this is written by Ben Tobin. Some of the Triangle region's highest-paying jobs are concentrated in a county many North Carolinians would struggle to place on a map. Granville County, whose largest municipality has a population of just 9,000, posts the highest average annual wages of any Halo County outside Wake, Durham, and Orange counties, according to a Triangle Business Journal analysis of data from the North Carolina State Demographer's Office. The data focuses on wages for jobs worked in the county, not the wages of those who live in the county. On average, jobs in this rural county, just north of Raleigh, pay just under $60,000 per year, ranking Granville County number 11 statewide for wages for 2024, the most recent available data. But those wages aren't spread evenly across the region. Just to the east in Vance County, average annual pay is $47,283, placing it in the bottom third of counties statewide. Wage levels across the Research Triangle's Halo counties vary widely, driven less by population growth than by the types of industries counties attract and support. While some rural counties have leveraged manufacturing and workforce training to push pay higher, others remain bedroom communities or struggle to attract higher-paying employers, shaping who benefits from the region's growth and who doesn't. I think particularly as a country, we over-index for just employment as the indication of economic well-being and success, said Chris Estes, chief program officer of the NC Rural Center. The realities of what people are earning, even when they're fully employed, can be radically different relative to the cost of living. In other words, proximity to the Triangle and job creation alone are no guarantee of higher pay, and the issue is a critical one in North Carolina, where cities such as Raleigh, Durham, and Charlotte have seen explosive growth, while rural counties have often been stagnant economically. Traditionally, rural counties that have aligned their talent pipelines with higher value industries, particularly advanced manufacturing, have seen wages rise more quickly, while others remain dependent on commuters or lower wage service jobs. As the region continues to grow outward, those differences are becoming more pronounced, raising questions about how rural counties can better capture the economic upside of the Triangle's expansion. Manufacturing powers Granville. One success is Granville County, straight north on Highway 50 from Raleigh. More than one in every five workers in the county are employed in manufacturing. For context, that's more than double the share of manufacturing workers statewide for first quarter 2025. The sector typically offers higher wages, according to Sharla Duncan, the county's economic development director. Our manufacturing industry groups are paying average wages well over the county's annual private sector wages, she said. For example, in machinery manufacturing, we have average wages over $69,000. Machinery manufacturing is an asset industry for us. We're seeing projected job growth, and our county has a high concentration of jobs in that industry comparatively. Several manufacturers have become long-term employers in the county, Duncan said. Bandag, now part of Bridgestone, has operated a retread tire plant in Oxford since 1969. CertainTeed has run one of the world's largest roof shingle plants in Oxford since 1978 and announced a $118.8 million expansion in 2022. Altec, one of the county's largest employers, is on its third expansion since establishing a presence in Creedmoor in the 1990s. Our county has been able to offer stability and longevity to leaders in their business, and with that comes an opportunity for employers to make continued and competitive investments in their employees, Duncan said. Granville County's proximity to Durham also plays a role, said Rachel Damaris, president of Vance Granville Community College. With its proximity to I-85, it is just in a really sweet spot adjacent to Durham, Desmarais said. It's getting some spillover economic momentum. Wage challenges in Harnett. Population growth doesn't always equate to booming local wages, as evidenced by Harnett County. The county's population has grown by nearly 10% over the past 4 years, climbing to more than 146,000 residents. But among the Triangle's Halo communities, Harnett ranks near the bottom for pay, with jobs in the county offering an average annual wage of just under $47,000, or number 71 statewide. For Stephen Barrington, Harnett County's Economic Development Director, the core challenge is a lack of industrial product. The single biggest challenge that Harnett County has faced per competing for and bringing in high-paying jobs has been the lack of available market-ready industrial speculative buildings and sites, he said. Manufacturing is the county's top recruitment target, Barrington added. Harnett's manufacturing base remains thin. Of the county's roughly 30,000 jobs, fewer than 2,000, or about 6.1%, are in manufacturing, well below both Granville County and the statewide share. The result is a county that continues to export much of its workforce. According to the most recent North Carolina Department of Commerce commuter data, about 84% of Harnett County residents with private sector jobs, a total of 34,439 workers, leave the county for work each day, including more than 11,500 who commute to Wake County. Still, county leaders say the foundation for higher wages is taking shape. In September, the Harnett 95 Industrial Center, the county's first Class A industrial park, broke ground in Dunn. The 65-acre site is expected to deliver roughly 800,000 square feet of industrial space, with the first building scheduled for completion in the third quarter of this year. We believe there is a direct correlation between our product development activities, bringing new industrial buildings and ready sites to the market, and our success in competing for new and expanding companies that offer higher-paying wages, Barrington said. As long as we can keep our foot on the gas with product development, we believe that over the next 10 to 20 years, wages will steadily increase. Structural issues in Warren County. While Harnett County's wage challenges stem largely from a lack of manufacturing jobs, a county along the North Carolina-Virginia border faces a more fundamental problem, a shortage of jobs, period. Warren County, with a population of about 19,000, had an estimated 2,840 jobs as of the first quarter of this year, or fewer than one job for every six residents. As in Harnett County, a large majority of Warren County residents commute elsewhere for work. Roughly 86% travel outside the county for their jobs. Those dynamics have weighed heavily on wages. In 2024, Warren County ranked in the bottom five counties statewide, with an average annual wage of about $42,000, a level that has remained stubbornly low for decades. It's just been one of the poor counties in North Carolina for a long time, said Robert Davey, town administrator for Warrenton, the county seat. Most people here go to work in another county. They don't work in this county. Since Davey moved to Warren County decades ago, the area has followed a familiar path seen across much of rural eastern North Carolina. Furniture and textile mills that once anchored the local economy shut down, and few employers emerged to replace them. Tourism, however, tells a different and more complicated story. Driven largely by Lake Gaston, Warren County has seen steady growth in visitor spending. Tourist spending rose 4% year-over-year from 2023 to 2024, outpacing the statewide rate, according to an economic impact study from Visit NC, the tourism arm of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. When you get on a boat and you drive down the lake, you see multi-million dollar mansions versus driving through the county where you'll see a lot of mobile homes, Davey said. So it's quite a stark difference. Creating better conditions. LaShawn Banks, professor of practice at the UNC Chapel Hill Keenan Flagler Business School, has worked extensively with both urban and rural communities to spur economic development. A Raleigh native, Banks previously served as a director in the Bloomberg Harvard City Leadership Initiative, which focuses on helping mayors improve quality of life for residents. For Banks, access to work is central to creating higher-paying jobs in any county. The number one thing, and this happens in urban areas too, but more so in rural areas, is removing the barriers for people to be able to get better paying jobs, Banks said. What are we doing around childcare? What are we doing around transportation? What are we doing around inclusive infrastructure that is preventing people from accessing better paying jobs? Addressing those barriers shouldn't fall solely on local governments or private employers, Banks said. Public-private partnerships can play a critical role in creating higher-paying jobs. She pointed to the NC Biotech Center based in Research Triangle Park as an example of a model that has helped facilitate life sciences investment in rural counties. Dalton Bailey, research and data manager for the NC Rural Center, said regional collaboration across county lines is essential for boosting wages in the Triangle's Halo counties and in rural areas statewide, which often lack the capital available to major urban centers such as Raleigh, Durham, and Charlotte. When it comes to business financing and these homegrown economic drivers, that is often what's missing in a lot of rural areas, Bailey said. Investment follows money, and in places like Raleigh, that capital is already there, but in smaller rural places, it can be a challenge just to get a business up and running. Estes, the chief program officer for the NC Rural Center, put it more bluntly, "Rural places can't rely on the idea that someone else is going to come save them by bringing a plant," she said. "That worked for a while, but when those plants left, people were left waiting for the next thing that never came." And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings. He bets on home of Andy Griffith. Carry Entrepreneur is developing a new hotel restaurant in Mount Airy. A Carry Entrepreneur's new venture is an upscale hotel and restaurant in Andy Griffith's hometown. Mount Airy's Main Street is full of shops with the Andy Griffith Show paraphernalia, and a nearby museum features items from the show. Surrey County needs the business the nostalgia brings. The county only had 71,500 residents in 2024, according to the U.S. Census. The median household income is just $56,000. But Srikanth Kama of Sunhouse Development Company sees an opportunity. Sunhouse is developing the Spencer's Mill site as the Balladeer Hotel and has landed a veteran chef for the restaurant and event venue opening later this year. The Balladeer will feature 70 rooms and be part of the Marriott International Tribute portfolio. The design will be a nod to Mount Airy's history, tied to textiles, granite quarries, and traditional music. Fablewood, the hotel's restaurant, will be led by Chef Freddie Lee, who operates several Triad area restaurants. Kama said Sunhouse has multiple business lines, primarily a petroleum business based out of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, but Kama said the company acquired an oil company out of Mount Airy in 2011. The company has gradually pushed into the hospitality business and even runs Griffith's original home in Mount Airy as a bed and breakfast. "We take a lot of pride in operating it," Kama said. Kama said Sunhouse purchased the town's Hampton Inn in 2016 and is now adding the Balladeer. All this aligns with a major push by the town, which plans to open a conference center next to the Balladeer this fall. "Mount Airy is the foothills of the Blue Ridge Parkway. We have great tourism. Mount Airy has a lot of history. It has a lot of visitors," he said. "We know that we wanted to do a project here for a long time." In West Raleigh, former Kmart site approved for new plans. Plans for the development of a high-profile property in Raleigh took a step forward January 6. The city council approved the rezoning of 4500 Western Boulevard for up to 20 stories of commercial mixed-use development. The 12-acre property formerly held a Kmart. Raleigh real estate firm City Platt purchased the property and the 118,000-square-foot building a year ago for $14 million. City Platt partner Vincenzo Verdino previously said the firm is planning to start developing the front half of the site along Western Boulevard in the next 2 to 5 years. UNC accepts a third of early applicants. This is admission season in the Triangle, and about a third of the in-state students who applied early for UNC Chapel Hill won admission to the school. Carolina tinkered with its admissions policy for in-state students this academic year. Nearly 15,000 applied to UNC before December 19. Of those, the school said 5,903 were accepted. UNC is gradually expanding its undergraduate population, and this year's freshman class of 5,094 is the largest ever. Citizen Kane gets a nod at new cocktail space. A local entrepreneur has a new concept for a cocktail bar with a nod to a famous film. After expanding to Midtown Raleigh with the restaurant Peregrine, the newly opened Capulet Cocktail Club, Patrick Shanahan is returning downtown with Rosebud, a cocktail bar opening in the space formerly home to Chef Ashley Christensen's Fox Liquor Bar. That bar closed in 2024. The 2,000-square-foot basement bar at 103 East Martin Street is set to open February 14. Rosebud, a nod to the iconic film Citizen Kane, will have 12 seats at the bar and 50 seats in the lounge. The venue will be equipped with a hi-fi sound system along with a large vinyl collection for audiophiles' listening pleasure. Rosebud will open just around the block from Shanahan's other basement cocktail bar, Watts & Ward, at 200 South Blunt Street. And finally, Indiana coach has deep ties to the Triangle. The coach, who has led Indiana University to astounding success in football, has some deep ties to the Triangle. After NC State University hired Chuck Amato as its head football coach in 1999, Amato hired Kurt Cignetti, now the Indiana coach, as an offensive assistant coach and recruiting coordinator. In fact, Cignetti played a key role in recruiting then unheralded quarterback Russell Wilson. Cignetti told ESPN that even though Wilson was relatively short for the position, he loved Wilson's intelligence and ability to throw. Cignetti left NC State for the University of Alabama, but returned in 2017 as the head coach at Elon University, which was just 7-27 the previous 3 years. Cignetti's teams went 14-9 over 2 years. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal, beginning with an article written by Lauren Onasorge. North Hills lands HQ for private jet firm. Fly Exclusive will keep a major presence in Kinston, but will staff up in Raleigh. A luxury charter service is moving its headquarters to one of Raleigh's newest office buildings. Fly Exclusive, the private jet company that got its start in Kinston, has leased the entire third floor, just shy of 24,000 square feet, in Kane Realty Corporation's One North Hills Tower. Records with the city of Raleigh show a $2.6 million renovation for the space. Fly Exclusive CEO Jim Seagrave said work has already started. "They're putting up walls right now," he said. The new office will have room for about 125 people, many of whom will be the new hires. While Seagrave said Kinston will certainly continue to be important, citing the planned construction of a new 121,000-square-foot hangar at the Global Transpark, the Raleigh location will serve as the headquarters. Flight control, finance, maintenance control, and research and development will be centered in North Hills. The firm is also in the process of moving into two suites on the fourth floor of One North Hills, totaling about 4,500 square feet. Right now, that fourth floor space is described as temporary, intended to support the company's current Raleigh operation, which has about 30 employees, until the third floor opens in June. Seagrave said the company has the option to keep the space, which can accommodate up to 50 people. "Depending on how fast we grow, I could see us keeping that temporary space," he said. In total, Fly Exclusive's North Hills presence could support as many as 175 employees. While some workers will relocate from Kinston, many positions will be filled through new hiring. Seagrave said demand for Fly Exclusive services has been surging, particularly over the past quarter when the company posted record flying hours. According to Seagrave, Fly Exclusive receives about 500 trip requests per day, but can only fly a couple of hundred of those. Life Sciences campus sold to New York firm. Spark LS campus sells for $226 million to entity connected to Fortress Investment Group. And this article is written by Kaylee Thompson. A massive life sciences campus in Morrisville has been sold to a New York investment group. Trinity Capital Advisors and Starwood Capital Group sold the Spark LS campus for $226.5 million to an entity connected to Fortress Investment Group, according to Wake County deed records. The sale follows Trinity and Starwood signing a lease with Millennium Print Group for 7 million square feet of space on the campus. The sale is for six parcels, which include two advanced manufacturing buildings, an amenity building, and undeveloped land. Those properties are 440 and 549 Sparkview Drive and 4, 4773, 4825, 4921, and 4965 McCrimmon Parkway, which total 80 acres with a combined assessed value of $57.4 million. No deeds have been posted for two other properties holding a parking deck and a 150,000-square-foot building. Records show Trinity and Starwood still own those. The entity acquired a $111.1 million loan from Bank of America to help finance the acquisition, per Wake County Property Records. A representative from Fortress Investment Group confirmed the deal was a net lease transaction where the company entered into a simultaneous rental agreement with the tenant. Fortress Investment Group declined to comment further. Fortress, with offices around the globe, has around $50 billion in assets under management. Since 2002, its net lease business has structured nearly 3,000 deals, representing over $19 billion in aggregate value, according to the company's website. What this means for the upfit and construction of buildings for Millennium Print Group is unclear. Starwood declined to comment. Trinity Capital did not return requests for comment. Millennium Print Group, a subsidiary of the Pokemon Company International of Japan, makes Pokemon cards. It signed a 20-year lease with options to renew for a total of 20 more years, according to Wake County Property Records. Trinity Capital was set to upfit 400,000 square feet of current space and build new buildings totaling 866,000 square feet for Millennium Print Group. Construction was supposed to start in 2026 with completion in 2027. The only other tenant in the campus is Coriolis Pharma, which will have 13,000 square feet in the building that Trinity and Starwood still own. The campus was to be built across two phases, totaling 1.5 million square feet of space, but it had struggled to find tenants amid softness in the life sciences market. Epic Games' $100 million Cary property sits idle. Site of the former Cary Town Center still remains undeveloped after plans fizzled. And this article is written by Lauren Onasorge. A year after Epic Games' plan to transform a former shopping mall into a Lux headquarters in Cary was formally withdrawn, the Fortnite developer continues to sit on the site. A public records request shows zero communication between the town of Cary and Epic Games since the town notified the video game company last December that its rezoning request for the former Cary Town Center had been withdrawn due to inactivity. Excuse me. At the time, records showed the town hoped to resume the conversation with Scott Berry, assistant town manager, writing Epic Games on December 5, 2024, that he looked forward to working with you and the Epic team as you develop future plans. A year later, however, no such plans have emerged. Epic Games, headquartered off Crossroads Boulevard in Cary, declined to comment on its plans for the former mall site, which is now largely a gravel lot surrounded by fencing near the bustling Fenton development. The company, which counts Disney among its backers, is led by CEO Tim Sweeney. Both Cary Mayor Harold Weinbrecht and Mark Lawson, president of the Cary Chamber of Commerce, said they have not received any updates about the site. Lawson said that should Epic ever formally move on from the property, the site would likely generate interest from other companies, as it is an exceptionally strong location. It would be well suited for a corporate headquarters opportunity, and it could also be developed as a modern corporate park with multiple buildings and high-quality amenities for employees, he said. The inclusion of green space and trail connectivity could further enhance the environment and create a comfortable campus-style setting. Epic Games bought the property in 2020 for nearly $100 million from developers Turnbridge Equities and Denali. The company filed the rezoning request in 2021, initially hoping to open the first phase in 2024, but that never happened after Epic Games' rezoning request was met with pushback from town officials concerned over the plan's lack of specific details, as well as the aesthetics. Councilman Jack Smith compared it to Attica Prison with a little bit of shrubbery around it. In its application, Epic had outlined plans for a mixed-use campus with up to 3.5 million square feet of office space, 75,000 square feet of commercial space, and a 200-room hotel, but the firm never submitted updated plans after that initial public hearing. So far, activity at the site has been limited to demolition. Should Epic resume its plans, it would have to restart the entire process. Currently, the property zoning reflects what was in place for the now-defunct Carolina Yards project, which allowed up to 1.2 million square feet of office, 360,000 square feet of commercial, 1,800 multifamily townhouse units, and 450 hotel rooms. Still, some appear hopeful Epic's interest will resume. A brochure for sublease opportunities from the nearby Fenton development still characterizes the area as Epic's future headquarters. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, beginning with Ben Tobin's page, Greater Triangle. Southern Pines buys bank HQ for town hall. Growing town adds space with $6.4 million purchase of former bank location. A bank and a growing community are giving a new meaning to public-private partnership. The town of Southern Pines in Moore County purchased the first bank headquarters at 300 Southwest Broad Street downtown for $6.4 million in December, according to deed records. The 21,000-square-foot building has served as First Bank's headquarters since 2013. Southern Pines announced in August its intention to acquire the building for the town's first official town hall. Southern Pines Mayor Taylor Clement said in a statement that this new town hall represents an investment not only in brick and mortar, but in the future of Southern Pines. By bringing our key services together in one modern, accessible facility, we're making it easier for residents to do business with their local government and reinforcing our commitment to thoughtful, long-term planning as we work for our residents, Clement said. The building will put several departments under one roof, including administration, human resources, finance, utility billing, planning, and inspections. First Bank previously said it intends to keep its operations in Southern Pines by finding a new space. The bank was founded in 1935 and has more than $12 billion in assets, employs 1,350 people, and serves 330,000 customers across North Carolina and South Carolina, according to its website. In the first months of 2026, the town of Southern Pines plans to make interior improvements, construct chambers for the town council, and coordinate department moves. An opening date for the new town hall has not been announced. The move comes as Southern Pines and Moore County continue to grow and add investment. The town now has a population of roughly 17,000, a big jump from 12,300 in 2010. In Lee County, industrial property sells for $2.2 million. Industrial real estate transactions remain hot in Sanford. 2920 Lee, a Cary-based LLC, recently purchased the Herc Rentals equipment rental facility at 2920 Lee Avenue in the Jonesboro Heights area for $2.2 million, according to Lee County deed records. The 9,690-square-foot facility sits on just shy of 1.9 acres. The LLC is registered to Jacob Plotkin, vice president at Lee & Associates, Raleigh-Durham, who said the property checked a lot of boxes for us. Single-story flex properties with industrial outside storage are increasingly difficult to find, especially ones that are well-located and leased to a national equipment rental operator, he said. The building itself is both versatile and generic, which gives it long-term adaptability, while the site functions extremely well for service-oriented users or equipment rental operators. Plotkin added that Sanford continues to benefit from strong regional growth driven by its central location, expanding industrial base, and improving infrastructure. Herc Rentals started as a subsidiary of Hertz, the car rental company, in 1965 before it was spun off as a separate company in 2016. It is one of the largest equipment rental companies in the world with over 600 locations. In Harnett County, Tractor Supply Store sells for $6.8 million. Another new Tractor Supply Company store in the region has sold for millions. Cleveland Village, a Garner-based LLC, purchased the Tractor Supply Store at 695 NC Highway 210 in Lillington for more than $6.8 million, according to Harnett County deed records. The store, which opened last year, sits on more than 4.5 acres. Representatives of Cleveland Village could not be reached for comment. The LLC is managed by Jonathan Adams, an accountant in Garner, according to filings with the North Carolina Secretary of State's office. New Tractor Supply stores have been popping up and subsequently selling for millions of dollars around the Triangle's Halo counties. In July, Realty Income of San Diego paid nearly $4.7 million to acquire a store in Creedmoor. Then that same real estate investment firm went down south to Moore County to buy another Tractor Supply store in October for $7.86 million. And finally, in Granville County, Industrial Park up I-85 takes big step forward. A planned industrial park has taken a step forward. Falls Lake Phase 1 owner, an LLC that shares an address with Charlotte-based real estate firm Trinity Capital Advisors, recently purchased more than 150 acres off an Interstate 85 service road in Butner for $3.5 million, according to Granville County deed records. The land will be used for the Falls Lake Industrial Park, which received annexation and rezoning approval from the town in July. Plans call for 5 speculative industrial buildings totaling about 1.1 million square feet of space. Mark Frederick, the Parker Poe attorney representing Trinity, told the town council in July that Trinity would invest $130 million into the project and create around 500 jobs. And now we turn to the real estate and development page. This is written by Kaylee Thompson. Office building sells for bargain. Peakstone Realty Trust sold building for $16.5 million in December. An office building on the edge of Research Triangle Park is sold for less than half of what it did a decade ago. The Silverman Group of New Jersey acquired the office property in Durham for $16.5 million, according to deed records. The seller, Peakstone Realty Trust out of California, bought the building in 2016 for $35.8 million. The nearly 220,000 square foot building at 3901 South Miami Boulevard is on 24 acres with a combined assessed value of $44 million. The building is fully leased to Toshiba for its Global Commerce Solutions headquarters. IBM previously owned and occupied the building before selling it to Peakstone. Toshiba's lease term is nearing its end, and the company is looking to potentially relocate, per a representative from brokerage firm JLL. Durham County property records list the building as Class C office space. The building has seen a 36% physical depreciation. The property joins other aging office buildings selling for fractions of their previous prices. A fully leased office building in Morrisville dropped $20 million in price from its 2019 sale, and a Durham office building sold for less than a third of its 2017 price. Over in West Raleigh, an office building sold for $5.7 million, half its sale price in 2020. The Toshiba building near RTP was built in 1999 and hasn't had any renovations or upgrades. Toby Nelson, vice president of leasing for the Silverman Group, said the company will perform renovations to the 219,249 square foot building, but he didn't disclose specific plans. Nelson said the company has spent the past year looking to get back into the Triangle market and saw this property as the perfect opportunity. The Silverman Group exited the Triangle in 2012. The firm owns 30 million square feet of space in 21 states. Durham Industrial Building gets $83 million. The first building in a new Durham Industrial Park has sold for more than $80 million. Indiana-based Scannell Properties sold Building 3 in the Triangle 55 Industrial Park to Boston-based Stag Industrial for $83 million, according to Durham County deed records. The 340,200-square-foot building delivered in the third quarter and is 100% leased. The industrial building is fully leased to Kuhn & Nagel, a global logistics company which started its lease term in the spring, an industry source said. The building has 36-foot clear heights, 51 dock-high doors, 52 knockouts for additional doors, and 4 ramps with roll-up doors. There is a truck court and 144 trailer parking spaces. Building 3 sits on 27.63 acres at 3450 Hobson Road, adjacent to land that UNC Health bought in 2024 with plans to build a $900 million hospital. Stag Industrial did not respond to requests for comment. The Real Estate Investment Trust owns more than 119 million square feet of industrial space across 41 states. Triangle 55 has 3 more buildings being developed by Scannell. Building 4 is 238,680 square feet. Building 5 is 266,760 square feet, and Building 6 is 215,460 square feet. When complete, Triangle 55 will have 1.3 million square feet of industrial space on 105 acres. Dallas developer invests $100 million in Durham. A Dallas developer is investing more than $100 million in preserving affordable housing in Durham. Dominion acquired the Magnolia Point and Falls Point apartment communities with plans to spend $21.6 million on renovations. Terry Sween, vice president and project partner for Dominion, said the company bought the properties because it wants to provide high-quality, affordable housing for Durham. This acquisition makes three properties in the Triangle for Dominium. Its first project is a planned 370-unit apartment complex on land that's part of the Raleigh Golf Association property. It paid $37 million for Magnolia Point in North Durham near the North Duke Shopping Center, according to Durham County deed records. Dominium will invest $10.6 million to renovate the 266-unit community. In South Durham, Dominium paid $46.5 million for the Falls Point Apartments, according to Durham County deed records. And finally, Carey property near downtown back on the market. A prime property near downtown Carey is on the market after a potential sale fell through. Curtis Westbrook Sr., owner of 607 and 611 East Chatham Street, recently posted two parcels totaling less than 3 acres for sale with a list price of $4.5 million. The property had been part of a rezoning application, but that request was withdrawn per the town of Carey. Westbrook said in an email the request was filed by a company under contract to buy the land, but the deal fell through. He declined to name the company. The rezoning would have allowed up to 225 multifamily units and a parking structure on the property near Maynard Road, east of downtown. And now we turn to the retail and restaurants page. This is written by Kate Tracy. Clyde Cooper's finds new home. Barbecue spot has been downtown since 1938, but will move to North Raleigh. It has been a long time coming, but Clyde Cooper's Barbecue has finally landed a new home outside of downtown Raleigh. The barbecue institution that's been open since 1938 is leasing space at the Quail Corner Shopping Center. Clyde Cooper's is taking over the space that local barbecue restaurant Red Hot and Blue occupies at 1326 Millbrook Road at the intersection with Falls of Neuse Road. TBJ reported in 2024 that Red Hot and Blue leased the space, a former auto shop, and planned extensive renovations ahead of its opening. The restaurant's indoor space is 2,000 square feet, substantially smaller than Clyde Cooper's downtown spot. Clyde Cooper's owner, Debbie Holt, said the opportunity to take over the space from Red Hot and Blue was heaven sent and came about within the last month. Eventually, she's hoping to open a drive-through at the Quail Corner space. The restaurant's final day of operating downtown was January 1. Clyde Cooper's had filed permits for a potential spot at Seaboard Station, but Holt decided against signing the lease there due to an approximately $800,000 build-out. Last summer, Holt sold her downtown restaurant space at 327 South Wilmington Street to a local Japanese restaurant called Hibachi 88. She has expressed her difficulties making it as a restaurant owner in downtown in the post-pandemic era as the city's urban core continues to change. Red Hot and Blue closed a previous Raleigh location in 2022 before its return with the Millbrook Road location. Its other Triangle location is in Morrisville. Other retailers at Quail's Corners include Big Ed's North Restaurant, Deja Brew Coffee House, and Cristo's Ristorante and Pizzeria. Quail Corners is an area of Raleigh that is seeing rising interest as the nearby neighborhoods of Quail Hollow and Lakemont are hot areas thanks to their location near North Hills. Marriott Hotel in RTP gets $11 million facelift. One of the Triangle's largest hotels has received an $11 million facelift. The Marriott Raleigh-Durham Research Triangle Park, a 226-key hotel in Durham, off Interstate 40 and South Miami Boulevard, has undergone a major renovation. Miami-based Driftwood Capital owns the property. It bought it in 2024 for $21 million. Driftwood's sister company, Driftwood Hospitality Management, will continue managing the property. But built in the late 1980s, the hotel is near many large companies in RTP as well as Raleigh-Durham International Airport. Driftwood spent the $11 million on renovating guest rooms as well as adding an M Club lounge, which is complimentary for Marriott members of certain status. The lounge offers food, drinks, and other amenities. Other updates include converting the pool area into meeting space and upgrading the fitness center. The hotel also made improvements to its HVAC system. Martin Pinsker, Vice President of Investments at Driftwood Capital, said in a release that this significant investment may establish Marriott RTP as the premier hotel choice for the many companies located throughout Research Triangle Park. Christensen to close Beasley's restaurant. Acclaimed chef Ashley Christensen is closing a downtown Raleigh staple. The award-winning chef and owner of AC Restaurant said recently that Beasley's Chicken and Honey will permanently close January 25. The restaurant at 237 South Wilmington Street opened in 2011. Its menu includes gluten-free fried chicken, chicken sandwiches, salads, and more. As we approach 15 years in operation, our food is as delicious as ever, Christensen said in a post on the company's website. But downtown has evolved in unexpected ways since the pandemic. While we've seen encouraging growth, the current Beasley's model no longer fits into the new landscape. The city's downtown core has been hampered by lower foot traffic in the post-pandemic environment. As a result, local officials and real estate developers have been pushing for more residential buildings in the area as a means to offset the lack of office workers feeding the retail businesses. Christensen, a two-time James Beard Award winner, said her restaurant group is concentrating our focus rather than broadening it. She will continue operating her two mainstay spots downtown, Death and Taxes and Pools. An LLC registered to David Meeker owns the Beasley's building. It was purchased in 2008 for $1 million, according to property records. Meeker is facilitating the sale of Beasley's and the restaurant's lease, Christensen said. The closure of Beasley's comes after Christensen closed Fox Liquor Bar in 2024. And now we turn to the healthcare and life sciences page, and this is written by Zach Ezone. In Greenville, ECU seeks significant hospital expansion. ECU Health is asking the state to approve a $138 million investment. ECU Health is seeking approval for a $138 million expansion to add five operating rooms at ECU Health Medical Center in Greenville, addressing severe capacity constraints. The health system filed a certificate of need application in October with the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. The application responded to the 2025 State Medical's Facilities Plan, which identified a need for five operating rooms in a service area, including Pitt, Greene, Hyde, and Terrell counties. ECU Health Medical Center currently has 34 operating rooms, including four dedicated to C-sections. These rooms operate at 112% capacity, ECU Health states in its application. No competing applications were filed. ECU Health officials discussed the project during a public hearing in Greenville in December. The health system secured approval in 2023 to develop two additional operating rooms, but those will not meet demand. Even with a conservative average annual increase in projected volume through fiscal year 32, ECU Health Medical Center will have to continue operating well above 100% capacity in order to meet the projected demand, ECU Health states in its application. Operating above capacity has increased labor costs and operational challenges. The health system has expanded normal operating hours and support services to meet surgical demands. While these costs have not been transferred to the patient through increased charges, the hospital cannot afford to carry these costs long-term and keep charges as low as possible, ECU Health states in its CON application, Certificate of Need. One operating room would be recommissioned in the main suite. Four rooms would be added on the second floor of the Heart Institute Tower, requiring 55,500 square feet of new construction and 21,750 square feet of renovation. Construction and renovation account for $112.41 million of project costs. Equipment and furniture costs total nearly $26 million. ECU Health plans to fund the project through accumulated reserves. In Durham, Actis Oncology pursues $200 million IPO, and Actis is spelled A-K-T-I-S. A biotechnology firm in the Triangle aims to raise about $200 million through an initial public offering. Actis Oncology, with offices in Boston and Durham, plans to sell 11.78 million shares priced between $16 and $18 per share. Funding from the offering will support the company's efforts to develop new cancer therapies. The company estimates net proceeds from the offering, based on an IPO price of $17, to be about $181.7 million or $209.6 million if underwriters fully exercise a 30-day option to purchase up to an additional 1.77 million shares at the IPO price. Underwriters include Bank of America Securities, JP Morgan Securities, Leerink Partners, and TD Securities. Actis filed an additional paperwork recently with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission as it pursues a listing on the NASDAQ under the symbol AKTS. The company's major shareholders are biotech investment firms. The largest stockholders are entities affiliated with MPM BioImpact, 26.2%, entities affiliated with VV Manager, 14.3%, entities affiliated with Echo R1 Capital, 10.5%, and entities affiliated with Blue Owl Capital Holdings, 7%, according to SEC filings. Actis CEO Matthew Roden owns 3.6% of company shares. And finally, Durham's Pelthos acquires lice treatment Xeglyze, that's spelled X-E-G-L-Y-Z-E. A Durham drug maker is growing its portfolio with its second acquisition in recent months. Pelthos Therapeutics has acquired a head lice treatment from HatchTech Pty Limited, an Australian company, for $1.8 million. The deal gives Pelthos the ability to commercialize Xeglyze worldwide. Pelthos paid HatchTech a $450,000 deposit in November, followed by a $1.35 million payment on December 23rd, according to a U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission filing. The deal does not include further milestone or royalty payments. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved Xeglyze in 2020 as a topical treatment of head lice infestation in patients 6 months and older. Pelthos plans to relaunch Xeglyze in the first half of 2027. Xeglyze is a highly differentiated product with a strong clinical profile, CEO Scott Plesha said in a statement. We believe it aligns well with our existing products and commercial infrastructure, making this an attractive investment opportunity for Pelthos. Pelthos formed in 2024 around assets Ligon Pharmaceuticals acquired through the 2023 bankruptcy liquidation of Durham company Novan. And now we turn to the last reporter page for this edition, On the Coast, written by Dane Huffman. Cause of fire in Beaufort unknown. A fire destroyed the historic Duncan House in Beaufort in December. A December fire in Beaufort has left the shell of a historic house and no clear cause for the damage. Town officials ruled that the cause of the fire was undetermined after the Duncan House was destroyed. The fire happened early in the morning on December 15th at the wood frame house that sat at the end of Front Street. Huge flames shot up in the air that could be seen across the area. The Beaufort Fire Department and eight other agencies scrambled to try to save the house. The house was unoccupied and no injuries were reported. Margaret and William Wooten are listed as the owners of the Duncan House property on the Carteret County Property Records website. Incorporated in 1722, Beaufort retains some of the state's oldest homes. The Hammock House dates to around 1700 and for a while housed the pirate Blackbeard. The Russell House dates to 1732. Front Street runs along the waterfront and serves as the central street for the town, with many popular bars and restaurants now located on the street. The Duncan House was located at the far end of the street with direct views out over the water. The Duncan House, according to registration form for the National Register of Historic Places done in 1974, dates to roughly 1790. After the fire, Mayor Sharon Harker wrote in a Facebook post, "This is a heartbreaking moment for Beaufort. The Duncan House is part of our historic fabric, and while we are grateful no lives were lost, the emotional toll of damage to a home, especially one with deep family and historic meaning, is significant." Wilmington loses new flight to Punta Cana. Wilmington International Airport has lost its international destination. Avelo Airlines had launched a nonstop flight to Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic in December, the coastal airport's first international commercial flight. The seasonal flight began December 23 and was scheduled to run Wednesdays and Saturdays through April. Airport Director Jeffrey Bork previously told TBJ the airport had been in discussions with multiple airlines over the years, but Avelo was the first to buy in. Bork said Punta Cana is a place Wilmington passengers are flying to through connecting service at other airports, and Avelo said it will likely look at additional international service in the future, he said. "We're going to start here and see where it goes," Bork said. Where it went wasn't far. On January 7, Avalo announced it was ending that flight, as well as one to Punta Cana out of Raleigh-Durham International Airport. Still, ILM ranks as one of the fastest-growing airports in the United States. The Wilmington Business Journal reported that the airport emplaned 831,000 passengers through November, a jump from the 671,000 through the same period in 2024. CEO Andrew Levy founded Avalo in 2021. Based out of Houston, the low-cost airline has expanded rapidly. Beaufort has new management for town's docks. The town of Beaufort has a new system in place for managing its popular docks. The town has turned to F3 Marina to operate the docks. According to the Coastal Review, officials announced in a news release that F3 Marina specializes in operating public and private waterfront facilities along the East Coast. With their experience and proven track record, we're looking forward to this new chapter and to working together to ensure the docks continue to operate safely, smoothly, and as a welcoming place for boaters and residents alike, Mayor Sharon Harker said in a release. A new website, BeaufortTownDocks.org, will guide people through how to make slip reservations and more. The website states that the dock offers 98 floating slips. And finally, Jockey's Ridge to host After Dark event this month. One of North Carolina's most popular destinations will host a rare After Dark event. Jockey's Ridge will have an in-the-park After Dark event on January 31 at 7 p.m. The event gives interested people a chance to explore the dunes in the darkness, a rare look at life after dark on the coast. Advanced registration is required and is available through the North Carolina Department of Natural and Cultural Resources website. Jockey's Ridge State Park on the Outer Banks is the tallest living sand dune on the Atlantic coast. It's a popular site for hiking, watching sunsets, and of course, hang gliding and flying kites. In January, the park is generally open from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Executive Voice Q&A column. This is written by Kaylee Thompson, and it features Morgan Mansa. A closer look, title, Director of Housing Affordability and Community Revitalization, Wake County Government, age 39, family, husband, 9-year-old son, education, BA, sociology, Calvin University, Master of Arts, Public Policy and Administration, Northwestern University, first job ever, Giordano's Pizza in Chicago. The decision by Morgan Mansa's mother to move the family to a better part of Chicago changed the trajectory of her life. That, Mansa said, made me realize that affordable housing, both the housing itself but also where it is, has such a big impact. In college, a sociology class taught her about the government's role in housing and urban planning. That pushed her to switch from pre-med to sociology so she could build affordable housing for everyday people in beautiful communities to change the trajectory of their lives. What's the biggest obstacle when it comes to addressing the housing shortage? The biggest obstacle is that everyone, all of our residents, our business community, our partners, have yet to see that the housing issue is their issue. It's not one singular person or one singular industry who should be working toward this. We all need to be paying attention to this and exploring within our work and honestly exploring personally what we can and should be doing to contribute to this. Some say more housing stock needs to be added, no matter the price. Do you agree? I don't agree with that. I think there's one part of the puzzle in supply, and that, yes, if you build enough units, in theory, it will make it so that the market will respond to that, and things will become affordable. But the time that it takes for you to build the number of units that are needed to have the market respond to it is way too long for any of us so that we can even see a return on that. Even when we see said return, it will never be to the extent that it needs to be to support individuals who are currently unsheltered, to help individuals who are not even lower income, middle income families. We have a strong missing middle deficit within our market. It may soften the market for higher income earners and eventually trickle, but it will never make its way to the folks who are hit the hardest and struggle the most with finding affordable housing in our market. What is the county doing in 2026 to address housing affordability? We're most excited about a new initiative called the Opportunity Fund, We have $10 million that we're seeding into this fund to essentially allow developers and our nonprofit partners to build affordable housing in areas of opportunity. And that's by way of this fund giving developers the dollars to acquire property. What's unique about this fund is that we've noticed when you map out all of the affordable housing within Wake County, there's a saturation of affordable housing where the land is most affordable. What we want to do is to be very intentional around where these developments go. The Opportunity Fund will prioritize areas that are near transportation, near jobs, near education, near amenities too. We want to prioritize those different attributes so that there's affordable housing that's equally distributed across all of Wake County. Something else that we're excited about is an impact tracker that we've created. It's important to lead by example, and so we're going to tell developers and businesses and other municipalities that they should consider contributing to affordable housing. What is something that many people do not realize about the housing supply? To simply say that we need to build additional units, that's an easy sentence to articulate, but how it's built and where it's built is sometimes equally as important. Thinking about the growth within our market and the deficit in our market, it is crystal clear that we don't have enough housing for individuals graduating from college, for instance, and you're looking to move back to our market. Let's make sure that it's responding to the people who are here, to our market. What inspires you? Honestly, my family. It feels cliche, but they are the reason why I do affordable housing. And with our remaining time with the Triangle Business Journal, we'll read as much as we can of 52 Shades of Success, The Impact of AI. About this project, 52 Shades of Success, The Impact of AI, explores the challenges and opportunities of individuals and businesses that are trying to leverage the capabilities of artificial intelligence with an eye on combating bias and its functionality. We'll focus on AI's impact on various areas of business and life. And this is written by Connie Gentry. AI that thinks ahead. Startup AMP, spelled AAMPE, deploys artificial intelligence agents that apply reinforcement learning to personalize interactions for each user. Already, more than 100 million AI agents have been deployed by AMP to personalize customer engagement by individualizing content and communications to each user's preferences and history. That's all thanks to a unique approach from the technology visionaries at AMP, who designed a novel architecture entirely different from the large language model or LLM architecture that has typically defined artificial intelligence. Our agents are not LLM-based. What we do is provision companies, usually mobile apps, with agentic learners that continuously manage customer engagement on a one-to-one basis, said Sean Wheeler, co-founder and chief scientist at AMP. These are semantic associative agents, and every user on the app gets their own agent that will follow them like a personal shopper, discovering through trial and error what the user likes, everything from the kind of products the user likes to the kind of content they want to see to what time of day they want to be contacted. Instead of traditional machine learning or generative AI, AMP's infrastructure leverages a subset of AI called reinforcement learning that enables each agent to continuously monitor and adapt in real time. The company launched in 2022 and has raised more than $27.3 million in funding with a global footprint and a fully remote business model. We're still very much in Series A mode. We aren't urgently needing another round right now, but I would guess that in order to scale, to keep ahead of other movements in the market, we'll probably look to raise additional funds in the next 6 to 12 months, Wheeler said. And we'll have to stop there as the rest of the article goes into more details about the company. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we've run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Derek Frost, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If they have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you.